It's time for Lunch Hour Reviews.
Creatures who feast upon the flesh of their victims.
I paint his liver with some fava beans.
Soylent Green, nice made out of people.
Feeding time.
I'm Darren.
And I'm Mindy. And we are the Rance Macabre, now part of the Fangoria Podcast Network. For more information about the network, including other programs, how to follow the show, and find past episodes of the Rance Macabre, please visit fangoria.com.
For this episode of the Lunch Hour Reviews, we are covering two movies, but we're focusing on the first and better Monsters,
right,
from 2010.
Which I really liked. I had seen it on Netflix a few years ago.
Yep.
And then I think it left and then came back because I saw it on there and they said, this kind of looks familiar. And then I saw that I rated it with 5 stars.
Oh,
and I was okay. Like, I must have really liked this, but I can't remember what this is about.
Okay.
Then I started watching it again and I remembered why I loved it so much.
Ah, okay. Yes. Back by popular demand on Netflix streaming. Written and directed by Gareth Edwards, who should be a familiar name because he's blowing up. He did the American version of Godzilla that came out 2 years ago.
But this was his first feature film.
It was. And this gave him a lot of heat. And he's also doing the next Star Wars Rogue One movie, which is like an offshoot of the series.
Okay.
You're not that interested.
Nope.
Have you seen the originals?
I've never seen any Star Wars.
All right. You're losing some nerd cred.
Well.
Easy. So Gareth Edwards comes from a background in visual effects and post-production. And so for his feature film movie, he was the one-man jack of all trades who got it all done, you know, literally at home on his own computers and, you know, doing his own special effects. Okay, so quick synopsis. It's funny. It's almost misleading that it's called Monsters.
Right.
But it says here...
But Aliens was taken.
Aliens was taken. The synopsis here, it reads, 6 years after the Earth has suffered an alien invasion, a cynical journalist agrees to escort a shaken American tourist through an infected zone in Mexico to the safety of the U.S. border. And so that's like a very tight encapsulation of a story. It's really like two character pieces,
right,
through some pretty tough terrain.
Sam?
Yeah?
My name's Andrew Calder. I work for your father's publication. They wanted me to come by here and make sure you're okay. So, is that broken?
No.
No, it's not. All right, so you're okay?
Yeah.
And so they actually filmed in a couple locations. It is Mexico, but it's Guatemala, Belize, Costa Rica, and then last, Texas. But the film was made like with prosumer equipment, with only the bare bones of studio backing in terms of like just having the people on set who could jump in a van and record and do audio and, you know.
But it doesn't feel like that. You know, it really feels like a really polished, huge budget kind of film.
It's kind of great. It's almost like, and it's a weird comparison, but like it's got scope the way like Apocalypse Now has incredible scenery. And in this case, like, it was just a couple of people.
But it's
and
a
some
vast
really,
world that they create.
I think he's got a great eye.
Yeah.
And I think that will go the distance. Like, frankly, you could have given him, like, a, you know, an iPhone, and he would have done something surprising with it. But in this case, like, he's got good enough equipment that he made, like, I'll say, like, this is a low-budget masterpiece.
Yeah.
This was impressive.
Yeah, because I wouldn't have guessed that was in any way low budget, because it's huge. And I remember exactly why I gave it 5 stars as I was watching it.
Yeah.
It's the gas station scene at the end. And as soon as the movie started, I said, I remember the scene exactly.
Okay.
That is why I gave it 5 stars, because it was huge and it was beautiful and it was scary. It was just everything I could want in a movie.
And unique. So the story does follow, and it's funny, this actually calls back to our Horrors of Space episode, when we covered Europa Report, we talked about how in the movie they play with the idea that there might be organic matter, there might be bioluminescent creatures under the ice.
I didn't catch this both times I watched it. When you told me, I go, oh, I wish I had.
Apparently, it's pretty subtle. It's in the news scroll, and so it's all like Spanish language television that they're, you know, this is in the background. And like, that's how well done the movie is, that it's not heavy handed. This is 6 years after fucking aliens have fallen from the sky, so it's not big news.
Right.
It's just kind of like, where are they today?
This is something that happens. Oh, yeah. It's happening.
It's again. Like a weather report.
Yeah.
so apparently in the scroll, they do make a note that a sample probe from Europa crash landed on Earth. So, you know, one sort of extrapolates from that these crazy bioluminescent organisms have tagged along for the ride and are now just making Mexico their home.
And when you see them, it is like they are very similar to the guys from Europa Report.
Some of them. Yeah.
Yeah. Using the same like bioluminescent kind of things. There's water monsters. There's land monsters. There's something for everybody.
There's even, for plant nerds, there's like crazy glow mushrooms. There's great stuff in the movie. And so the glow mushrooms, I wonder how much like practical effect, like maybe they had some like pink glow sticks that they kind of used the lighting for and replaced it after the fact. This is one movie that I'm kind of bummed that I only got exposed to it on Netflix, because I would nerd out hard on the behind the scenes and the making of. But yeah, what's on screen speaks for itself. The alien design in this is unique. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, it's not sort of giant Cloverfield monsters.
No.
It's not something we've seen before, really. The closest I can think in The Mist, the Stephen King adaptation with Thomas Jane, they give you a sense of like some of these more enormous, multi-legged, maybe 150-foot tall creatures. So that's the closest I could compare these monsters to.
Yeah, they're like giant walking octopus creatures.
They are. They're kind of Cthulhu-like.
And so that's where when you had mentioned this Europa thing, that's clearly the monster in Europa Report.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, the one in Europa Report, the glimpse is a little more like squiddy, octopus-y kind of.
That's what these things kind of are.
I suppose. Yeah, okay. In any case, they're not Godzilla. They're not going after people.
They seem to do their own thing.
They're not engaging unless they're engaged.
Right.
Yeah. But so, you know, when the sort of local, I don't know, Sandinistas sort of open fire on them, they defend themselves.
Oh, clearly.
They, you know, encounter them. That's the kind of terrifying idea.
And if your boat is kind of in their river, they're going to try and eat you.
Yeah. Well, I think even if it's a giant animal acting scared, that's still a terrifying idea.
Right.
That, like, you know, anybody who's even encountered like a giant dog knows that it doesn't mean to hurt you. It just wants to play.
Yeah,
or is scared, God forbid. So the actors Scoot McNairy and Whitney Abel, they're now a married couple. So like any chemistry they have on camera is authentic.
Yeah.
And so
they're great. They're very real, very subdued. Again, it's that
mumblecore.
Yeah. It's just a very subdued style of acting. It's very honest and it's so natural.
I think a lot of it is due to the improvisation that it sounds like there was a very loose script. They kind of had a point they needed to arrive. But everything the actors did in the meantime was for them to figure out.
That makes sense, because it's very honest between the two of them.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I guess, you know, they were shooting digital, so it's just kind of like,
try again.
Yeah, you're not going to run out of tape.
Right.
So their dynamic, it's, he's sent there by like the owner of the newspaper that he works for. And he doesn't really want to force her. It's not really worth too much trouble, but it might be like a career advance opportunity.
Right.
So, you know, he does get her along. And, you know, of course, things go wrong because people are evacuating and Mexico's, you know, hard to get through when it's not inhabited by aliens.
But now we're going through the alien zone, the red zone there.
Yeah, so they have to sort of go through back channels and figure out another way. And when they arrive at the massive wall, and it's funny that like politicians, dickhead politicians, invent like reasons for needing this wall,
a giant
with,
wall
with
of
Mexico.
Course.
And it just seems like the most ridiculous and practical thing ever. But for all intents and purposes, this movie constructs that wall for the sake of monster containment. And, you know, even then it fails.
Yeah, right?
As it turns
like,
out.
The idea of the wall is really stupid when these things are fucking giant and bigger than the wall. Bad idea. Like, that's just stupid. That's like putting a Tic Tac box in front of me while I walk. Like, okay, neat, great.
And it didn't seem like it was, there wasn't enough military to secure the wall. So it was just a disaster. It was a great special effect.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing the wall and sort of, again, you get the sense of this massive wall was overcome by these aliens. And we still haven't gotten a full glimpse mm-hmm. at them. So it builds and builds and builds this idea in your head that like these things are enormous.
Right.
We've only yet, you know, it's like the joke of the idea of the blind man feeling an elephant, you know, in one place, like not having a sense of the scope.
Right, right.
This movie builds that sense. And it was incredibly cool. So once they do sort of get into the United States, we talked about them filming in Texas. I think it was, you know, it's meant to be border towns. And the practical sets are, my best guess is, was post-Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
And
that would
so
make sense.
All these areas were evacuated, destroyed, decimated. Like it was a mess. So all these towns that they're going through on foot are just a disaster.
Yeah.
You've got like, you know, this sort of accidental great production value.
Yeah, I mean, in whoever these decimated was, towns. If he was doing his own like scouting for scenery, I mean, he nailed it start to finish, you know. Mm.
Yeah, so the idea is that the monsters, the aliens, have come through and they've laid waste to everything in their path. And they're just looking for a phone. They're looking for some way to get out because they thought all it was going to take was getting to the United States to be
right.
saved. And then it's going to take a lot more than that. And then it kind of descends into their, you know, sort of coming to terms with where they are in their lives. And this
right,
story
right, right,
because
they have personal... Not only are you dealing with monsters... of the real legitimate kind.
Personal issues.
You also have like these serious, serious personal issues. And I don't know. I just thought it was great. And I thought, you know, they really do hide these monsters throughout the film. For a lot of the film, you don't see the whole monster ever at a time.
Yeah.
Until you're at the very end. And it's the gas station scene, which is what made me give it 5 stars. It's just so beautiful with the two monsters. When you really see the two aliens together. And you see just how big they are and you see how vast it is and you're in this like decrepit Texas gas station.
And the colors, like as they're sort of joining, they're this like bioluminescent pink and purple
Which,
and blending
you know,
sort
any
of.
Any bioluminescent shit, I'm on board.
Yeah, so that was Monsters from 2010. And totally worth a watch. Definitely check it out on Netflix streaming. It is also on Netflix streaming with its sequel, Monsters, The Dark Comet.
NASA has confirmed
fragments of the satellite have been found in the Middle East.
My God.
Planet has watched them grow to an unprecedented scale.
You know I got your back out there, though, right?
I'm always one that's got your back.
Yo, boys!
So incidentally, as Gareth Edwards was working on Godzilla, this sequel to his first movie was getting made. This one is written and directed by Tom Green.
But not the Canadian one.
Not MTV's Tom Green. Written by Tom Green and Jay Basu. It was filmed in...
You know who's in it? Joe Dempsey is in it, who is one of my most favorite characters from Skins. Like, oh. I'm so excited for this right now. I just got, everyone can experience, like, how excited I get on movies. This is how I think about things because, what? This is crazy.
Okay. I don't remember which character he plays, but I assume he's one of the, like, young officers.
He's Chris on Skins. Oh, I don't know who he plays in the show.
So it occurred to me, in terms of recommendations and whatnot, Monsters is definitely one to see.
Yes, definitely.
And if one were to love this through and through, they would also want to check out The Mist, the adaptation of the Stephen King short story done by Frank Darabont. And also Cloverfield, which
definitely Cloverfield
kind of covers a lot of the same territory, except it's New York and it's actually very high budget, where Monsters makes really good use of practical settings. And like we talked about, Mexico and Guatemala and Belize and Costa Rica. But yeah, so Cloverfield taking place in Manhattan.
Cloverfield is clearly one of my favorite kind of big monster movies like this.
Yeah. And we covered it in our New York episode.
Yeah.
People who love monsters would probably enjoy the sequel to some extent.
I'm excited to see it. I know you like shit on it, but I'm excited because I really loved the first one. I really did. And I love Joe Dempsey because I loved him on Skins.
Monsters Dark Continent came out in 2014. And
it's a terrible title, though.
I think it... Yeah, it doesn't really... I mean, if they were to call it Monsters 2, people would think it would be like Monsters, Inc. 2.
Sure.
Monsters University or what have you. So you kind of understand why they went with Dark Continent, but it's also a little... It's throwing a little shade at the Middle East because that's where it takes place.
Oh, okay.
It films in both Jordan and Detroit, and the point is that it actually does take place in the Middle East. Brief synopsis is that 10 years from the events of Monsters and the infected zones have now spread worldwide. In the Middle East, a new insurgency has begun. At the same time, there's also been a proliferation of monsters in that region.
Okay.
The army decides to draft in more numbers to help deal with this insurgency. So I mentioned it partly takes place in Detroit, and that's because the soldiers are... We get a lot of backstory of a lot of these guys sort of growing up together and that sort of bonding that happens before
they're
even...
And they're going to become military that goes fights monsters.
Not exclusively. First and foremost to like fight the war, the monsters just are part of the scenery.
Okay, fair enough.
Although they do, you know, that is a big part of the movie, is that they occasionally are prepared to take on monsters with grenade launchers and large caliber weapons. But I don't know, it doesn't really work. It changes modes so dramatically from the first movie that it's like Black Hawk Down with monsters in the background.
We will fight those who oppose peace in this world, human or otherwise.
Not really. Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. We've seen versions of this before.
And this one was scripted, not improv.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It should have been better. It's very beautiful. It's hard to make an ugly movie in the desert, you know.
Well,
it's just
true.
A lot of wide open terrain, and you know, you sort of throw in these like abstract looking monsters that are larger than life and
similar to the ones in the first Monsters. Are they different? Are we seeing different monsters this time?
A combination of like the giant squiddy looking guys. There's others that are smaller and the size of a Humvee, so they're like running alongside.
Terrifying, sure.
There's some pretty good stuff there. And that's the thing, they're not overly aggressive, they're just kind of defensive when they're fired upon, or
that's how the first one is, you know.
Yeah, they're not out to get us. They're as confused as we are.
Yeah, they're like, I don't know how I got here.
From Europa.
Yeah, I lived underwater in Europa. I ate this shuttle. How did I get here?
Yeah, so it tries to play as an allegory for the war abroad. And the sort of running theme is, you know, fighting the monsters there so we don't have to fight them here.
But they're
That's
here.
That's familiar. It seems like when they're chilling in Detroit, they're not really, like, they seem to have stopped the monsters on the invading United States side of things. Yeah.
How did the monsters get to the Middle East? Do they explain this? Because the monsters get to where they get because they get dropped there.
Right. They land.
So how did they get?
That's a good question. Maybe there's more than one. No, I guess it was just the one sample core.
Yeah,
that
not a lot
came
of stuff
back.
Really falls out of the sky from Europa. You know, like, it's the odds are not
it's
in
like
your
a
favor.
Meteor shower. That's very War
but
of the
then,
Worlds-ish.
You know what I was thinking, too? If they're from Europa, I wondered why they don't get into the water in, like, the Gulf of Mexico and just swim wherever the fuck they want and take over the planet.
maybe that's what ultimately happened. If they did,
so they swam across
the
ocean
in Mexico
into, I don't know how you get there.
Yeah,
I'm not good at geography.
I don't know, but I could see them going through like South American countries that like don't have a huge military and just kind of running through them. But yeah, crossing an ocean is a long way.
Yeah.
Although if they're from Europa, then like they're probably really good swimmers.
And they probably can handle deep sea shenanigans.
I'm surprised, like on the note of being used to the climate of Europa.
Why they live so good in the desert.
They do seem to be thriving.
They would go to Alaska.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the familiar territory.
Yeah, I was kind of confused, like, yeah, how are they doing so well? Well, I guess they're apparently like very, I guess, adaptable.
It would seem. They do have a weird, like, driving into the sand kind of dance that's illustrated with, like, one of the baby aliens that's caught by, like, a local boy. And so it's pretty good animation. I mean, through and through, these movies have great CGI effects in terms of the monsters mm-hmm. and that rendering. But it does demonstrate this weird, like, burrowing into the sand deal, which... the bigger monsters, we get to see them do that as well. And I don't know. It was almost, it was dance-like. It was very
like
strange
in Zelda,
and beautiful.
When you go through the deserts in Zelda and the things come up out of the sand and they go into the sand, they come up and get you.
I haven't played that one. I don't know.
Oh. Take my word for it.
So that was Monsters, Dark Continent. Less impressive than the first one. You know, it was ambitious, and you kind of give them credit for that, but ultimately, okay.
Well, that's disappointing. I'm still going to watch it just because I really did love that first one. I thought it was beautiful.
Yeah, you might wind up liking it. I don't know. It's funny. I was thinking of movies to, like, compare it to in terms of, you know, mix of military and Aliens from Outer Space and mm-hmm. the movie Aliens. It's a tough one to compare because Aliens is a perfect film.
This is more like Predator.
I don't even know. I mean, the aliens really don't factor into it largely in terms of the story.
Okay.
So it's even closer to like just, I don't know, the movie Jarhead or Black Hawk Down.
Oh,
or
I don't see, and I don't really like those kind of movies, so.
Yeah, I wonder. I'm interested in what you'll say.
I'll let
you
know.
Yeah. So that's it for this episode of Lunch Hour Reviews on Monsters and Monsters Dark Continent. It's funny when you say it. It almost sounds like incontinent.
Dark continent.
So that's it for this episode of Lunch Hour Reviews. As always, we are the Rance Macabre. We appreciate any reviews on Twitter. You can find us on iTunes or Stitcher. And leave us a review while you're there. It goes a long way in helping us spread the podcast.
Or give us any suggestions you want us to watch, you want us to talk about anything.
Yeah, we're always interested in new movies to check out. And stuff to put on the list to put in future podcasts. So, yeah, hit us up. We're also therancemacabre.com and @RanceMacabre on Twitter and Facebook.
You've been listening to The Rance Macabre, a presentation of the Fangoria Podcast Network, produced by Darren Rosario and Thomas DeFeo, and executive produced by Ken Hanley of Fangoria Entertainment. For press opportunities, advertising inquiries, and information about The Rance Macabre, contact Ken at Fangoria.com.
And for information to get Melinda to voice over your commercial,
I can read.
Get to her at Rance Macabre on Twitter. This is me, Darren, signing off.
And I'm Mindy. Thanks.